had it.
Well, they should have it there.
But it should be on, you know, phone information. I think it's called University Microfilms Incorporated.
Yeah, UMI.
Yeah, UMI.
I may even have a catalog from them around. They
okay.
Periodically.
Yeah, I'd like to know if they have your thesis in it.
I don't know. It's pretty old. I doubt it, but you know, you never know.
All right, so we got to footnote 225, right? Where we're going to go to 225 of the manuscript.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're at 225.
Right, and it says, I have here, the very dominance of this work in laws of media, Vico's new science, confirms its importance, which is well attested to elsewhere by McLuhan. I have in brackets, maybe, cite references.
Okay.
I don't know. I can't think of it. What are some other references?
Well, I think in some of the critical articles.
Right. Okay. So I'm.
When you're writing on Joyce, he does.
That's right.
You know, push Vico, and anyway, I can add another reference.
Just to prove that he does cite him another, 25, 30 years before.
Yeah. Well, that's easy enough to do.
Okay. So then, on page. Okay. Now we go to footnote 228, page 228.
That was note what?
Footnote 14 at the top of page 228, footnote 14,
okay.
Where you say David Heyman, the wake. William Cadbury first brought to my attention, that's you, Don, talking, that technological, technicultural, and scientific references seem to be part of the later stages in the elaboration of the wake.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at the page 46 of the interior landscape.
Yeah.
The second last page of the essay, Trivial and Quadrivial, McLuhan says, this is in my memory, he talks about the exuberance of language and the symbolism of Anne Olivia Plurabelle, and then he goes, but it wasn't until years later that Joyce figured out blah, 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 blah. That, to me, has always seemed that McLuhan knew that Joyce really understood the media level of the wake later in the 30s. He was too involved in the content of the writing stuff, and then as television and technologies unfolded in the late 20s, early 30s, Joyce began to see, oh, this is what I'm really dealing with.
Yeah, well, I wasn't thinking there of the media stuff as much as the straight scientific stuff.
Oh, okay.
But I mean...
But that is science, that is technological.
Yeah, well, in fact, the whole technology thing is later...
Right, and I'm saying that McLuhan, back in 53, seemed to know that Joyce updated the wake in the 30s. I mean,
everybody did know that.
Right.
Well, we didn't have any real access to the in-between. See, what you had to do is you could look in the 60s. It wouldn't have been before that, in fact. In the 60s, you could look at Heyman, the first...
Right.
Heyman's reconstruction of the first draft. And you could then look at what was published in transition and what was published at the end.
Yes.
But the sort of generational stages which came about after they brought out the archives were only available to people that went and worked with the manuscripts like Heyman.
And that was available in the 60s or even later.
What?
This last thing you just said. The
James Joyce archives?
Yeah.
Oh, that didn't come out till the early 70s and probably wasn't in libraries much before 73, 74.
Right, but you could, those archives, you could see through Heyman in particular in the 60s. Heyman was beginning to show the archives, right?
Yeah, but not enough that you would be able to follow that history in them. That's what the point would be making. The only thing you could do was jump from Heyman to the transition publication.
Right.
But often that was too far because I think Marshall, you know, I think actually if you looked at the stages of the manuscripts today, Marshall's guess would have been a bit off because I think most of the elaboration occurred in the very late 20s.
Okay, but here, the thing is we know that Joyce started, I understand that in 35, 36, Joyce saw the meaning of TV and redid a lot of the wake gearing it towards the TV thing.
Well, I'll check that. I think that's late again. You see, I mean, sure, he saw that TV section. That the actual TV event was about 32 or 33.
Right.
But there had been earlier experimentation with it in England, and it had been written up.
That's right, in 24, 26. Baird did it in 24, 25,
yeah,
26.
Yeah. So, his awareness, I think he was aware of it earlier than that.
Okay, no, I agree, because in the first page 380 of The Wake, the Roderick O'Connor, he says, last pre-electric king. He's got the electric thing going.
Oh, well, I think, of course, he had the whole idea of the technology, and that's the aspect of technology from the very beginning.
Right, so you're... So,
see, you have to think that he was doing the Patrick
Druid doing that
Druid thing, and that was very complex in these ways.
So you mean the particular physicist stuff?
Well, what I meant is more the elaboration of the language itself, the insertion of the mathematical stuff,
right,
the physics stuff. But I think the basic insight was there, and as John Barge always keeps saying, in the vignettes.
Right. And that's where he and Duchamp were similar. They were on to the given, the technological cliche environment around them, and looking at it beyond what anybody else was doing.
That's right.
And using it. Yeah, but it's interesting in terms of...
But I'll look up that thing in Marshall's because I'm interested in it now. Where was that?
Page 46, at the bottom of the page, going into 47. The last pages of Triv and Quad.
Okay.
In interior landscape. But what I'm saying is that Marshall intuited that Joyce was doing a lot with The Wake at the end of, in the middle 30s, before he published it at the end. He had a clearer vision of what he was doing, and he reorganized it or synthesized it better. Whereas he was more probing around and not fully realizing the vision in the late 20s. The idea that Joyce had a better command of what The Wake was about later in the 30s is McLuhan's point. And I see that the revisions done at the end of in the middle 30s and later, which would be the scientific stuff, is the technical realization of Marshall's general statement that he was he learned something and used stuff later.
Yeah.
And that he had a clearer vision. So maybe if you read the sentence, you can work it out. But I just wanted to tell you that McLuhan does imply that something happened later. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. So I'll look it up.
Yeah, something happened later, and Joyce had better command of what he was doing, and I want to resonate that off with footnote 40, where Cadbury says the scientific stuff was put in later.
Uh-huh.
Right. Okay?
Okay.
So that's, you got that, Joan?
What page was the note 40?
Note 14.
Oh, 14.
Page.
I got 14.
Page 228.
Yeah, page 228.
228, and that's page 46 and 47 of the Triv and Quad, Interior Landscape. The
Interior Landscape.
Yeah, page 46, 47. All right, now we go to page 244, where you say, McLuhan adopts the mask of the detached observer as a way of dealing with the dissociation and fragmentation brought about as mechanization comes of age.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have, in quotes, I employ the greatest boon of literate culture, the power to act without reaction, the sort of specialization by dissociation that has been the driving force behind Western civilization. Now, I think you should say brought about as electrification comes of age. Mm-hmm. Or do you mean by mechanization becoming art form?
Well, I mean that, and I'm also trying to echo the Gideon business.
Right.
But this is really a problem because Marshall, of course, as you know, insisted on dividing mechanization and electrification.
Right.
And that doesn't work fully.
Yeah, what's interesting is in the very first explorations, and his letters to Pound, he talks about the TV and radio as the mechanization of speed and gesture.
Yeah.
Then he does.
That's
he,
very much in the Gideon.
Right, in the Gideon
line, and then he
probably said, well, there is a difference between mechanization and electrification in terms of electrification is simultaneous and not fragmented. It's organic and not fragmented. He wanted to emphasize that, so then he made the distinction.
Yeah, but it still leaves problems.
Yeah.
I mean, it was one of the reasons he had so much trouble with the idea of digitalization.
Yeah. Because that's the bitness. That's the bittiness and...
And
that's really mechanization, so to speak.
It really is an extrapolation of mechanization.
Right. And that's what's good about your books, is that you point out the bitness of tactility.
Yeah.
Not just the coherent synesthesia of it.
Yeah. Well, again, he knew that, but he... You know, I mean, he had real prejudice against any kind of business anyway.
That's right, right. Yeah, he was a holistic mystic, biased to the holistic vision.
Yeah.
Even though his strategy was to represent separateness as the power to be detached. You know what I mean?
That's right.
Yeah. So that's where his schizoid confusion is. So I just wanted to page 244. Note if you want to say that. If you want to leave it, that's okay, as you've defined. You might want to make a footnote on that and explain the problem.
Yeah, I think I will, because any of these questions you raise are questions other people are going to have.
That's
so
right. Right. So we're talking page 244, mechanization. You put a note, Joan, in relation to electrification.
Mm-hmm.
Electrification comes of age. Okay, that was that one. And page 250, you have Joshua Meyerowitz. I just know him as Josh Meyerowitz, I think. Is that you probably have, I don't have his book.
His book is Joshua.
So he's Joshua, that is his name.
Yeah, he does. He signed himself Josh, but his book is Joshua.
Okay, so we got that. Then page 250, that was 250, then 253. Page 253, footnote 18, you talk about Eric Baclone ultimately wrote his doctoral thesis, which was not completed until, and you have a blank.
Yeah, I have to check that.
That's 1982.
82 we finished it?
Yeah, that's when
it was presented.
Yeah, that's the date on the copy I have. 1982 on page 253, Joan, note 18.
I got it.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's helpful. I didn't have the thing here, so I
right.
knew it had something I had to check later.
And then on the same page, 253, note 21, you say Pontifical Institute located in the University of St. Michael's, where McLuhan taught for nearly 30 years from 1948. That should be 1946.
Uh-huh.
And that's footnote 21
uh-huh.
on the same page as 1982, page 253.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so we got that. Then on page 255, you mentioned Tony Schwartz on page 255.
Yeah.
There's a T in his name, RTZ.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I know that. That's
right.
A typo.
That's just a quickie, yeah.
Yeah.
And you often oscillate Wilfred Watson. You have FRID or FRED.
It's ED.
ED, right. So that's often through there. And page 261... That was 255, Joe.
Yeah.
Now we're going to 261. You mentioned Gerard Manley Hopkins. That should be L-E-Y, not L-Y, but you probably know that.
Yeah, same thing. I do all this all the time, typing.
So page 261, Joan, Gerard Manley Hopkins, Manley spelt wrong, all right?
Oh, okay.
Then we go to page 279.
Yeah.
And I have here... In fact, page 279 in the middle, in fact, illuminating, given the platonic, rhetorically oriented tradition of the poet as liar, and then you have in brackets for it, argued in my book that McLuhan was a prose poet, Manke. You want to footnote liar in reference to the table of contents and cliched archetype. There's a chapter called Casuistry, and then in brackets, art as lie.
Oh, yeah, thanks. I remember that.
Right.
That's good.
So page 279, Joan.
I got it, yep.
Reference to the headline of one of the chapter titles in Cliched Archetype, where he talks about art as lie.
Cliched Archetype.
Yeah.
And you know, it was later that became one of the controverted footnotes in Media Myth Review Mirror.
Yeah, that's what the fight over was.
Yeah.
And I suppose you wrote that before the book came out, and then the book did come out because you didn't get because of the delay, and then you could cite it.
Yeah, right.
But I don't think you cited in your Media Myth Review.
No, well, Cliched Archetype was it out?
It came out in late 70s. It probably came out later than you could use.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Because you wrote your book in 69.
I don't know.
Then you wrestled with Marshall in the summer of 70. So that means the manuscript's already going around. It's pretty well finished.
Yeah, I think so.
And then I don't think Cliched Archetype... When you corrected it for Fry, you probably did that by the fall 1970.
He didn't correct it. Fry accepted it when Don put a footnote in.
That's right. And that was probably done within the fall of 70 when this thing was happening, right?
I would think so. But I'd have to really
recall, the book came out at the MLA in 71.
In the spring?
Or would it be the winter of... It couldn't have been the next year, could it, Bob?
No, it was 71.
Yeah.
Yo, it came out in 71, but you mean early 71.
Yeah, didn't we go to the MLA with Robin?
Yeah.
And it just came
that
out.
That could have been the 70 MLA, though, you know.
No, because, it's dated 71, so it couldn't have come out.
Yeah, but I mean, it could have. One of my books is dated 95. It actually came out in December of 94.
That would be the Beyond the Word.
That happened.
It came out in December 95, Tom.
Well, then it was... Oh, was it?
Yeah. And then the other one came out in June of 97.
Arizona.
Yeah.
Oh, so you're canceling the December 94 statement? That's not true?
Yeah. It was because it was December, it's so late.
Yeah, so it was December 94. Okay, so the date on that is right then. Beyond the World is 95.
That's okay.
95.
So what? Probably you went to the in the winter, January, February, MLA of 71.
No, February. They always have it over Christmas.
Late 70, December 70 then.
I don't know. Maybe could it have been 71, though?
It could have been either. I wouldn't know. I
think it'd be more probable because after all, you were still fighting with Marshall in the fall.
Was I?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, it's in the letters.
Yeah, because
October.
It's in the letters, and he has letters to his publishers in October. And the correspondence goes up to November. So I think it probably came out in the spring or summer of 71, and then we went to the MLA next year.
I see.
And you would have gone to the MLA in December 71.
Yeah, I think
and so. And it had been out for 5 months, so to speak.
Well, maybe, I don't know when it came out. Maybe it just came out at the end of summer.
Anyway, I just did a computer search. Media Myth Review Mirror and Cliched Archetype isn't in there, so.
It's not even mentioned at all.
No.
Yeah, so
it means the whole thing was done. In fact, the Culture is Our Business is done as an
appendix.
Appendix, because it came out after the manuscript was finished.
Right, so Cliched Archetype came out too late for you to use the liar thing, is the point.
Yeah.
It came out, I remember being in Toronto, and I got Cliched Archetype in the spring of 71, I think. I saw it up at the UP, but I think... Your manuscript was already gone, but...
Oh, it would have been in the press, but...
Right.
Yeah.
So then,
because I remember now, I had a gallbladder operation, and I was working on this. And anyway, in the spring of 71, it was well in the publishers, but...
Right. And the gallbladder was the year before?
I don't know. I think so. I'll have to get it right now.
Right. You wrote it. When you were in the hospital.
Part of it.
And that was in 69.
Yeah, I wrote it because I had someone beating my head in all the time. I was trying to convalesce.
That was right. Putting the typewriter under your nose when you
Yeah, okay, so on page 280, Yeah, you have culture and communication. That's just another case where you want to check the S, but it's probably don't need an S there. You probably think it's communication singular. I just have culture and communication as an example on page 280, that late in the manuscript, where you have to determine whether it has an S on communications or not.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then I check that still.
So then that's not that important. Oh, just a note, Joan, if he's going to correct, if it's singular here, that's probably correct. So you don't have to correct page 280, but if you want to make a note.
No, because if it's communications, it could be singular too, because one of the reasons for confusion is Donald, you correct me if I'm wrong, but the communication was still associated with speech communication,
right.
Language communication. You know, they had departments who were founded around this type of theory of communication. And then, you know, of course, they started out that the difference was communications was when all the telegraphic and all the other things.
Yeah.
Incidentally, I have the answer for you, Bob. The carpenter book of, you know, bits and pieces from Explorations.
Oh, what is it?
It's entitled Explorations in Communication.
Singular.
Yeah.
Explorations plural and communication is singular.
That's right.
All right, so that, I think that's, can't remember, you may not have had that in the manuscript, but wherever we marked it, you'll check that.
But
so there it is. So it is singular.
It should be singular.
Yeah.
That's what I thought, and it's good.
Okay.
Yeah, and he mentions me at a culture and communication seminar.
Singular.
Yeah.
Not singular, just communication, not communications.
Yeah, singular.
I mean, communications is not a plural. It's like a name.
Well, yeah, but it's
no S. No S at the end of it.
Yeah, well, anyway, there's no S. That's right. The title of the thing was Culture and Communication.
Wouldn't communications be a sort of compound noun, meaning telecommunications?
Well, it is both. You see, communication as communication is both the plural of communication when you're talking about a letter as a communication. If you get two letters, it's two communications. But in the, when I got started talking about communication in terms of the basic theories, basic ideas, and then they got talking about teletype communication, they used the plural, not the plural, but they call one communications and the other communication.
Right. So it is the singular in our case.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then on page 281, you say... when I first met K. Taki, my involvement with his work over the 30 years from when I first met him until his death, and then more briefly with his family and their approved disciples in the over 25 years since his death. That should be 15 or 17 years.
Yes. Over 25 years, what was I thinking of? I wonder if I meant from his death.
No, it's just that you've been so busy in the 90s.
I think you were including things like the Adrian's little communication.
Yeah, I know, but that wouldn't be. Anyway, I'll look at it.
You've been so busy in the 90s that the death of McClellan seems like a long time ago.
Well, I was so busy in the 80s, right after he died.
That's right.
That was a horrible period, yeah.
So you're so busy, that seems 25 years ago.
Yeah, I guess.
So anyways, in the approved disciples, that's from 81 on. So if you're talking 98, that's 17 years.
Yeah, that's right.
So page 281, get rid of the 25.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Joan?
I got it.
All right, then page 282, you say, for a young student of 21, the association with Marshall was wonderful. Now, you were technically 21 when you met Marshall in July 1950. You're not going to be 22 till October 1950, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes, because his birthday was not... He wasn't 21 until October.
No, he'd be 22.
He'd be 20.
I'd be 22 in October 1950.
Yeah.
No,
I was born in 28.
28.
22 is 50.
That's 50. Yeah, I was 22 in October 19th.
Right. So,
when I met Marshall when I was 21.
Right, you're almost 22, so you're going to leave that as 21.
Yeah.
In terms of actual time, you're in your 22nd year.
like innocence.
But, you know, if you add up the months, when you turn 22, you have completed 22 times 12 months.
I know, I've got all through this with the millennium. I'll stay with 21.
Okay, so that's that. And I might have noted that earlier when I wasn't sure in an earlier manuscript, but I decided we leave it as it is. You're right, you know how old you were. Page 284, you mentioned the Gutenberg Galaxy. It's, you mentioned the Gutenberg Galaxy dated 1964, make that 1962 on page 284.
Yeah, the Gutenberg Galaxy 62.
Right. Then we go to page, you got that, Joan?
Yeah.
Then we go to page 290.
There was 284.
Yeah, 284. Then we go to page 296. 296. Say, fortunately, the center was later reopened and celebrated its 30th anniversary in 1989.
Yeah.
Should be 1998.
Yeah, that's certain.
Yeah.
Another
hasty quickie there. So 1998 on page 296, okay, John?
Uh-huh.
And then on 296, you have, I was away from Canada when Marshall died in 1981. He died in 1980. It was the last day of 1980.
Well, I didn't know about it till 1981. I'll have to clarify that, but you know, I did. I heard about it in 81 and January 2nd or something.
Yeah, where were you?
In the Caribbean.
On vacation?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, yeah, he died December 31st, 1980, the morning of that day.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody talked about him at the New Year's Eve parties.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you'll change page 296, 1981 to 1980, Joan?
What? Well,
296? Yeah. Same as the 1998 question on 296 about
so
the center.
Wait a minute. Well, how's it read now? I just want to make sure.
It says, I was away from Canada when Marshall died in 1981.
Well, I was also, I could, I could say 1980.
Yeah, just say 1980. So
we were away over Christmas, so anyway.
Right. So just so that you, I mean, they'll say, no, he died in 1980, even though it's right on the cusp, and it's just about 1981. But just to be technically correct, because it's those kind of nitpicking, that's all they've got, Don, on you.
Maybe to be very technical, you should say, and I heard about it the second day of 1981 or something.
Right. So
that's what I was thinking of there.
Right. So that's page 296, Joan.
Yeah, I always thought that it actually was 79-80 because we were I thought you were just starting out at Trent. I mean, you were here.
Well, no.
It wasn't? Have you been here for the year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you started as president in January 1980, right, Don?
After I...
Yeah, but you were there 6 months.
You've been commuting between McGill and Peterborough for...
6 months before.
Well, I don't know if it was six... No, I think it was three, and then we moved here in Thanksgiving, 79.
Okay.
That's why I get a little confused.
Right, and just below 1981, you have Corinne's name. It only has one N, but most of the time it's written right, but sometimes you've got it wrong with two N's.
Mm-hmm.
Or one R.
The two R's, isn't it?
Yeah, two R's and one N.
Yeah.
But sometimes you have one R and one N, two R's, two N's. It's mixed up a lot. So then page 297 is another case of Mady Molinaro.
Oh, yeah, okay, we'll get that.
So that should
297?
Be 297 have Mady Molinari, and it has to be Molinaro.
Molinaro.
Oh, not I. Okay.
So it's M-A-L-I-N-O-R.
No, M-O-L. Mala, M-O-M, like Molly Bloom. M-O-L-I.
M-O-L?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But you can look at it on the letters book, but just we have it here in my mind. M-O-L-I-N-A-R-O.
Molinaro. Okay.
I don't think it's Molinaro. No, it's Mal. I'm pretty sure it's O. But check her name.
Molinaro.
I know it ends in O.
Yeah.
That's the point.
I'll check.
Right. And then that's 297. Then on page 298, you have... with a 1996 invitation from Severo Latrenge. That should be 1997, Don.
Okay.
Unless he invited you a year before, but I don't think so, because he didn't know of you.
No, it was, you're right on.
Yeah, I told him about you, and he wrote you or called you.
Uh-huh.
So, page 298, 1996 should be 1997, Joan.
Okay.
And then, page 316 in the Carpenter article. Carpenter says, in 32 years of friendship, now he's writing this, Marshall dies in 1980, so that goes back to 1948.
Mm-hmm.
Don thinks it's more, they really connected in 1950 after Don came. So
yeah.
You might want to clarify with Ted when you're talking to him.
Yeah, I think I will.
That you're saying you introduced them or were part of the introductions, yet he's going to say, no, Don, I met him in 48.
Yeah.
You might want to talk to him about that.
Yeah, okay.
Because he might, as you said, seen McClellan around,
uh-huh.
but they never really got working together until you came along, until the late 1950 or so.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's, as I mentioned it to Ted, he said 1948 pretty quickly. He has that in his mind.
Uh-huh.
And then when I noticed this sentence, he's even got it technically accurate, because 32 years before 1980.
Okay, well, anyway, I'll check that out.
Yeah, it's 1948. So, okay, so I think that's everything. Let me just check a couple. I've got this headphone on. Let me just check a couple things in my library, and we will be finished.
Okay.
I'm going to take this off, and I wanted to look up Molinaro. What was it?
You don't have to look up Molinaro. I have the book.
Okay, you see it right there? All right. What was it that there was a couple of little footnotes? Looking in their medium is a rearview mirror.
Uh-huh.
It says, first reprint, December 71.
Oh, well.
That's reprint, so it came out earlier in 71.
Yeah. I think that was the MLA in 70, I think.
So you probably went to MLA in
oh,
December...
You mean,
yeah, 1970, I'm pretty sure that was it. Yeah.
Oh, you mean 71 was a reprint?
In December 71, first reprint, it says.
Yeah.
In December 71.
Is the first reprint.
Yeah.
Oh, so they might, Rob Melissa had a first run.
Yeah, he had a pre-publication run at the MLA.
That's why I thought it was 70.
Yeah. Right, so in your mind, can you remember having the Specter McClellan over you at the MLA while you're handing out the book?
Well, Arnold was there among other people.
And would he have known of the battle behind the scenes?
Oh, yeah, he wasn't too friendly.
Right.
He did come, though. It was a little reception, and Walt was there.
Right, so that was probably December 70. You had the ghost of McClellan hanging over you as a background to what was really, you know, behind the scenes, right?
That's right, yeah.
So then it comes out and...
Well, we didn't know about all those letters that Marshall had written to us.
Yeah, we didn't know, you know.
Until about, well...
Robin never told me about the correspondence.
Well, but Robin got very ill after that.
We knew about the...
resistance. You knew about the general resistance to the book.
Yeah, well, we knew about the deal that had to be made with Fry and stuff, but we didn't really know the... I didn't know anything about the letters and all that stuff.
Right, you knew about the Fry, yeah.
Yeah.
So it probably came out... you got an early couple of copies run, and it probably came out in the spring of 71 for mass distribution, right?
Yeah, I would think so, or even earlier.
Yeah, so you had a few... You had the first copies when they did it, or...
Yeah, well, Robin brought them down with him.
Okay.
I can check that, because I have a review of the book from the LA Free Times, which was done very expeditiously after it came out.
The LA Free Press.
Free Press, yeah.
Yeah, I used to look at that. So you're saying that Robin brought you the actual copy that I have in my hand, he brought you a couple of those, the exact same copy.
I don't know about that.
Oh, were they hardback?
Yeah.
Oh, they would have been hardback.
Yeah.
Right. And then a reprint would have been paperback, do you think?
I think it would have been both.
Okay. Anyway, so there's that. Now, write this down, Joan, for ordering Project 69.
For what?
Well, do you have Project 69, the report, the media report 1960, Don?
I don't know.
Okay.
You better give it to
to her.
Okay, it's called University Microfilms International.
University
Microfilms.
International.
Yeah, UMI, Ann Arbor, Michigan. And you you probably need to, University Microfilms Incorporated. Here's the number of the report, so when you order, they can look up in their files for the number.
Oh, this is the NAB thing.
Yeah. And it's number 61-3619.
3619.
Yeah.
And what is the name of the document?
Understanding New Media. It says on the outer thing.
It says
actually, the report, it says in capital.
Well, is that the one we had the draft of? Donald?
Yeah, we have it in the mimeograph one.
Right, here's what it says. On the, they stamp a, they have a zero, they send me the bound thing, and they put a label on the front that says, Understanding New Media.
Yeah.
H.M. McLuhan, degree date, 1962. They think it's a degree by McLuhan, and they think it's 1962, but that's not the case. Because when you go inside, they have the handwritten title. Handwritten by McLuhan or somebody, it says Understanding Media, not Understanding New Media. And then in a little subtitle on the bottom corner of the page, it says, A Report to the United States Office of Education from the National Association of Education Broadcaster. Then you turn the page, and it says in smaller print, Report on Project in Understanding New Media.
So
it has Understanding New Media again, but in the middle phase, it says just says Understanding Media. And it says at the bottom, it says Consultant H. Marshall McLuhan, and it says June
30th, 1960. Yeah, right now.
So there's various titles and things, but so I want to give you the date of that. I mean the number. 61.
Yeah, we'll put it in the book. Yeah.
Yeah, because you could, if you have any students who want to get it,
you
can give them the 613619 number. Right, Joan?
Yeah, 613619.
And a dash between 61 and 36, because probably that means.
And you order it by, we can find that.
Yeah, you phone them up. And I did it by phone back in 1980s. But
how long did it take to get it?
Not very long. I don't remember waiting very long. They just ran it off, printed it up, made it, and sent it to you. But remember the 61
how did you get, did they have a catalog or something that you got the number?
No, I remember calling up and they looked it up on their computer and there under McClone, there it was.
I see.
And then...
Boy, the National Archives of Canada could certainly learn something from that.
Right.
They give is just absolutely prehistoric. It's so bureaucratic.
That's right, because Mark wrote them months ago and didn't even get a response.
Oh, Mark Stallman.
Yeah, he called them. They said, send us a note what you want. He did it, and he never heard back from them.
Well, I sent in a purchase order in September, October, and we still haven't heard from them.
Well, I know, because I started to get buying stuff as soon as I got it. And I could put big orders in there, and they'd get it off to me real quick. And that was before they had organized it. But now they've organized it, it's a lot harder to get to it.
Where's that?
At the National Archives.
They've got it out in Hull now, you know. So they have to bring everything in.
No, it's not as close as Hull.
They have to bring it all in from Gatineau.
You have to go down there, find out what you want, fill in about four different cards, sign different documents, and then you come back the next day, and if you're lucky, they have it.
That's right. Well,
I mean, you can't go in one day and see anything.
Right, and back
and then when you get it, I looked at what I wanted, and then I ordered the Xerox copy, and I said, how long will it take? And they said, well, it can be anywhere from 1.5 to 3 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where is
that's in the National Archives in Ottawa.
I know. So back in 1990, late 80s, early 90s, when they had just organized the McLuhan acquisition, I started ordering articles immediately, and I got a lot of them. And then one day, they were so good and fast, I sent an order for about 30 articles, and they sent back, hey, this is too big. Break it up into smaller things. And then I only did a bit, and then we moved. But
they had have this thing that they ask you not to ask for more than 25 pages, but if you're asking for something that's a book or something, you certainly can't do that.
Right. So the point is that when they were just beginning and no one was writing to them, I got a lot.
Yeah.
Now they've moved it out to Gatineau and all that stuff.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
And I could do it by phone. I mean, I'd phone, they'd send me the form, I'd fill it out, send it in, and I got the article.
Well, what they have to do is they have two deliveries a day. But if you miss the morning one, then you have to call into the afternoon one away, you know, and then it goes in for the next day.
Right.
It's a 24-hour turnaround.
Right, that's why I've never gone. I mean, you have to
and
spend
then
two,
they're not open on Saturdays.
Right, so you spend 2 weeks of living in a hotel there to get this stuff. You know, it's just too expensive to go down there and hang out.
Yeah.
So I gave up in trying to get stuff from them. But I've got so much it doesn't matter. But the things I did get from them, I wanted and I was lucky, and I got them before they got too organized.
Yeah, well, Don was one of the president's meetings one time. We were in Ottawa, so I went over to the National Archives because was it Bill Toy had told you they had
yeah.
Jim McClure.
And that's when you got the letter.
Well, that's when I got the letters because at that time you could go through the boxes and then just mark what you wanted copies of.
Right, that's probably what they were. I was dealing with the boxes like you were in 87, 88.
It was wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, you really see what you were getting and
now you're
make
saying,
choices.
Right.
Now you have, they are on their fourth catalog of the McLuhan things.
And you're saying it because that means they have so much?
No, they just keep revising it. Now I think it's worse than when it started.
Yeah, you mean they revise the numerical system?
I don't know what to do.
Or the number.
I mean, you know, it took me about an hour to figure out what all these numbers meant.
And then on top of that, the stuff is out in Gatineau.
Jeez. And so you had to go through these catalogs with just some more or less effective descriptions. Usually, I think they're getting worse because, you know, every guy who does it and wants to make it different than the one before. So then you write down or you bring over to the person what you want and write it all out. And then she has to look it all over, and then she gives you a form, and then you sign that, and she signs that, and then you get another form, and then you get an orange card. And I actually got through, this time, I got through with only two pieces of paper, and I went in, and the woman says, where's your orange card? So we had to call the guy in the other office to get two cards. They had to have duplicates, of course, and then bring it in, and I had to fill it out, and he had to sign it, and I had to sign it.
Gee, now this is recently?
Oh, this is
September.
No, is that September?
Yeah.
Well, were you trying to get some McLuhan documents?
We're trying to get a thesis.
Ah, and you're still waiting on it?
Still waiting on it.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's what my I guess I'm going to have to write them a letter or call them both.
Okay, so all right. If I get a chance, I'll look through the thesis, see if I can find that wild conservative, because you're maybe not going to get it in time.
Yeah.
To look up the wild conservative quote.
Well, yeah, if you do, that'd be helpful.
Yeah.
I think we should get it.
So, why don't you call Don?
Okay, I'll call him.
Right. So I told. Oh, so here is. Now this is Eric's thesis. I want to give you Eric's thesis's number.
Oh yeah, do that.
The title at the top. It says on the outside. It says Manipian Thunder at Finnegan's Wake.
Manipian Thunder.
At Finnegan's Wake.
At Finnegan's Wake.
And Finnegan's Wake is in quotes, and then they have a colon, and then it says, the critical problems.
The critical problems.
And that is dated University of Dallas, PhD.
U of Dallas.
1982. Now the copyright.
That's the same. Oh, no, that was the report was 19. Yeah, okay. This is Eric's.
Yeah, and so the copyright for this microfilm is 83, University microfilm is 1983.
No, this is, you mean number 83?
Yeah, it was just copyrighted 1983. Now I'm going to give you the number for it.
Copyright on what the...
Well, whatever it is in relation to university microfilms. So he gets the PhD in 1982, and whatever deal is set up with the university microfilms, it's dated 1983. Copyright.
the thesis is 1982.
Right. That's when he got it, 1982. And, but then when he's making it available for them to publish, or to have for the public, whatever their services, they have a little copyright in 1983. And that's why the number is 83. So that McLuhan's Project 69 was June 30, 1960, but the number is 61-3619. The first two numbers indicate that the year that they have it in terms of
universe. Well, then, look, I'm just trying to write that. I have Manipian Thunder saying his way, colon, the critical problems, the title.
Yeah.
University of Dallas, 1982, copyright.
Forget the copyright. I'm going to give you his page, the number in their system. Here's the number. 83.
Number?
83-0-5556. Right. Now, I'm saying that since it's copyrighted for University Microbes 83, the number 83 obviously refers to the year in their system.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So that's why the Project 69 is...
So you don't have to write copyright anymore. You just say 83.
Don't forget...
As the Understand No Media was 1960, but number 61.
Yeah, the first two digits indicate...
And I have 61, but it's 613. Is that it?
61-. The way it's technically written, it's 60.
Yeah, but this one is 83 without a dash.
Yeah, maybe but it's probably a new system or something.
Good.
But the 61 indicates the year the University of Microfilms was dealing with.
Yeah, I get the idea that they make it a year later.
Yeah, and they put the year at the beginning of the number. Okay, so that's the two theses, those two things. I give you the 1953 Innis article. Give you the exact dates. If you want to look it up, Don, and check it, but it's Queen's Quarterly, Volume 60, Number 3, Autumn 1953.
Autumn 53.
Yeah, it's called the Later Innis.
Later
Innis.
Later Innis.
And it's pages 385
to 394. So if you want to check that. And who's the
author? McLuhan? McLuhan, yeah. That's where he talks about Innis did not understand Joyce.
Okay.
Then we...
Probably Trent will have the Queen's Quarterly.
Right.
Well, no, that's 53. He might not. We can look it up on the computer.
When did Trent start? No, but they got a lot of donations from some of the older professors.
I mean, they might have
some studies. So
well, then it will be listed in periodicals.
So when did that... But Trent started when?
Oh, 65.
Oh, okay.
No, it started at that because you were the president. No, you were chair of English at McGill, and we came down when they opened the other campus.
Yeah.
So it started, I think, only...
It started in 65.
That's York. You were in York in 65.
Well, and it started... Yeah, it must have started in... Yeah, it started
in... Oh, you mean it started downtown in 65?
Yeah, I was in Toronto when they were getting around to opening it. So.
Oh, that's right. You were still there.
Yeah.
And then we came down, I guess, in 67. Would it have been that year?
Yeah, you were at McGill in the fall of 67.
Yeah, no, I know.
Yes, we were here.
Was it that when we came down for the opening of the
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so it started in the middle 60s and had stages of opening.
Yeah.
So going to page 46 of the Interior Landscape for McLuhan talking about Joyce understanding what...
47?
46 and 47 of Interior Landscape.
Yeah.
Here's the sentence. He goes, but like Shakespeare and Chesterton, Joyce uses the pun as a way of seeing the paradoxical exuberance of being through language. And it was years after he had begun the wake before he saw that the babble of analysis Olivia, through the night world of the collective consciousness, united the towers of Babel and of sleep. So he's saying that Joyce learned something later in organizing his book or whatever he was thought he was working out. And I'm taking that general statement.
So that's on page 46 to 7.
46 to 7, 47, right. So I'm just saying, Don, McLuhan intuited that Joyce realized more of what he was doing later.
Yeah.
And arranged the, did some more work on the book with a bigger vision. And that's
if there to be 100, he would have written even more and changed it again.
Yeah. He would have created Understanding Media.
That's it.
The Laws of Media by James Joyce.
It would have been different.
That's right. That would have been so great if he had lived and been around in the 50s and 60s. Wouldn't it have been incredible?
Yep.
Him commenting on all this stuff with what he had done?
Uh-huh. Oh, there would have been some great unhappiness among the followers.
That's right. But it's almost like it was so awesome if he stayed around that he couldn't stay around. It was just too awesome for him, for the world to take it. But the thing is that I'm saying that your thing about Cadbury saying he brought in the scientific stuff—that's part of this later realization or later use to fill out his vision. And I'm saying, do you agree? Is that McCool may be right that he intuited that Joyce did? Because this is in '53, nobody has seen the documents or archives yet.
I'm going to hold. Actually, I don't even think that Amon's book was up then.
In '53,
I don't think there was any way of knowing what was in the original form unless you went and saw the manuscripts, and I know Marshall didn't do that.
So he made an intuition here.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty good intuition.
It's a good intuition, and, you know, people had a sense that he'd done this in stages that obviously you could do, but I don't think, you know.
Well, yeah, McLuhan is saying that Joyce learned something about it while doing it that altered it later. You know, I mean, that's the intuitive leap he's making, and I think that's what happened.
That's possible.
I mean, I actually remember I've talked to Joyce through the medium, and he said that.
Well, I'll look at it and see what I think.
Right. Someday I'm going to have to play you my
documents. Yeah. Anyway, you're going to send me some stuff too, aren't you?
Okay. So yeah. So we're pretty. I think we're finished.
Yeah.
Those were the backups. I'll try to find the. I'll see if I can find the genetic engineer.
And we're sending you Adrian's address.
Okay, good.
And also a copy of a draft or review that I am working on of Darren Toff's memory trade.
I went to Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
Nobody can get it. They somehow the distributor doesn't connect with Shakespeare and Company or St. Mark's Place or Barnes & Noble. Have you got copies up there?
No, I only have a copy he sent me, you know.
Maybe it's not, is it?
That's going to go to the same.
It has a U.S. price for it, so.
Right, so ask him where I can get it.
I will, I'll do that. I'll be writing to
him. That's one of the things that did 21C in original. And you said they're using the same distributor?
Yeah,
G&B. That's impossible. Or the company.
G&B is what they're using, yeah.
New Jersey.
Yeah, in New Jersey is where I got the back issues.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But did you get the back issues, Don?
Not yet, no.
Yeah. But I didn't know until I read your manuscript that you and he go together as coining this phrase, prehistory of cyberculture.
Yeah.
But you probably came up with it, right?
I sort of did, yeah. My thing came out in 91, actually, no, 92, not at the end of 91 or 92.
Is that why he got in touch with you, because he read that?
Oh, sure, yeah.
And he was already on to the Joycean aspects?
Well, he was doing a thesis on Joyce.
Was he?
Yeah, that's why I thought you and Marion both might like it.
Right, but the thing is that he reads your thing on cyberspace. Did he get that idea from you, or had he already
thought of it? Obviously, yeah.
But you're giving him credit for actually intuiting it himself.
Well, why not to some degree?
Big pardon?
I think to some degree that's true.
So he did he have a good enough understanding of the wake to see that?
Well, you get it and read it, and then we'll talk about it.
Okay, so he.
I don't want to condition your reaction to it.
And so Memory Trade, did he finish his thesis?
Yes, he did.
And the book is a...
Oh, well, you see, he first got in touch with me because he sent me his thesis.
And that, when was was that, 95?
Oh, I don't know. No, later than that. I'd have to look at dates.
But well after your cyberspace article.
Oh, yeah. He sent me the thesis, and I read the thesis for him before he submitted it.
Right. And what's it on? Is it on...
But I do that for other people. Well, it's pretty much the last chapter of this book in a slightly different form. You know, and people do that. I had a guy from Japan named Mikio Fusei who sent me his thesis to read, and I read it.
But you're saying the last chapter of Memory Trade is his thesis?
Well, I wouldn't say is his thesis. It isn't just a reproduction. It's a rewriting of his thesis.
Right.
Yeah.
But does what is the title of his thesis?
I've forgotten.
But is his thesis talking about cyberspace?
Oh, to some extent, but it's more muted than in the book because,
right.
I mean, he was writing it for obviously a university audience.
So what was he emphasizing in Joyce then?
Oh, more the same direction, but more from, you know, Derrida and Ong and writing and this kind of thing.
In reference to technologies too?
Yeah.
Right, so it's a Derridean version of Eric's thesis.
No, I wouldn't say it was a Derridean version of Eric's thesis, no. First of all, I wouldn't say it's a Derridean. He's not very Derridean.
Or is it a postmodern version of Eric's thesis, then?
Well, that doesn't have anything to do with Eric's thesis.
Well, in terms of Eric's emphasis on the technologies.
Well, yeah, but I mean, Eric does it in a very special context of the Sundance,
right.
Which is not the only context.
Well, is Darren, in his thesis, talking about technologies more than literary motifs or something?
Well, I think he's talking more about the technologizing of writing and Ong and that kind of thing.
Oh, okay. There's an Ong influence.
And Gregory Ulmer's work, if you know that, is reason in grammatology, in applied grammatology, is rather important to it.
You said Gregory who?
Ulmer, U-L-M-E-R.
Yeah, he did a book on Derrida and Cage or Duchamp or something, didn't he?
Well, he did a book called Applied Grammatology.
Right. I've seen Murray has that.
Yeah.
I've seen that. And he talks about Cage or Boyce and those guys or something.
Yeah, oh yes, he does do that, yeah.
Is Ulmer an art critic himself?
No, he's a professor down at the University of Florida somewhere.
So it's an Ulmer-influenced thing.
Partly.
Yeah, okay.
Ulmer and Thiel, I'd say, were very strong influences on it.
But the Thiel is later. See, he wrote...
Well, I mean, he had read Beyond the Word.
Ah, okay. So it is an extension of your angle.
To some degree.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, he has his own ideas, but, yeah.
But then he found your book, and that helped him crystallize his thesis.
Oh, yeah. Well, he makes that very clear in his book.
Okay, great. So then he interviews you on the fuzzy semiotics. I've never seen you write on fuzzy semiotics. It's just a term in the 21C.
Yeah.
Is that coming out in the new book?
Well, maybe. If I ever get around to it, if I ever get this damn McLuhan thing off my back. And a couple other things I was just sending, and then I must get off.
Okay.
But I was just sending my proposal for the meanings of the Joyce thing in June. I'm going to do the paper, a mischievous paper.
Good.
Finnegan's Wake is Manipia, the satiric metamorphoses of the apocalyptic.
Woo! And that's going to be, what city is that in?
Charleston.
Right. So, when you get it finished, send me a copy at some point.
Oh, yeah. I was even thinking if we can work it out, we might stop in New York on the way back from Charleston.
Oh, that'd be good.
But I'm not sure, and I...
Right. Don't forget I have your archive. I have a lot of your articles.
Okay.
Now, I got a McLuhan archive, I got other archives, but I have a Thiel archive. That's why you should keep sending me the articles.
Well, I will do.
Yeah. Because I have a lot of stuff I xeroxed years ago in the 70s and 80s from journals.
But this one, as you can imagine, is a kind of, a colloquy with Eric or something.
Right. It sounds like a kiss-off.
Quite. No.
You're saying, I've had it with these guys, this is what it is.
I'll send you a copy
it's the complement to this book.
Yeah, I think it could be.
Yeah. Okay. So the Paramodern. I'm going to send you my CDs, my paper for Lance, and something else. And I think I qualify to be written up in your cyberspace book on the Paramodern, because I'm the only one out there that was using Joyce in the correct way of the party line of Donald Theol.
Well, I will do that.
And you'll hear the albums, you'll see it. Have you got the McLuhan, the album that Nelson put out called The Medium is the Message with McLuhan tapes? McLuhan talking?
I think I do, yeah. I hadn't heard of it in Nelson, but I do have that tape of McLuhan.
Yeah, you may not ask. I guess what I'm saying is that I was the one using McLuhan, but you bringing in the Finnegans. I was the only one in the McLuhanist world of the 90s pointing out the Joycean roots of McLuhan, which is your thesis.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that I rank up there as a good Menippean or Veronian satirist within this paramodern world.
Okay.
I'm making a plug for the next book, Don.
Anyway, we'll be in touch soon.
Okay, then, Don.
And thank you for everything. It was tremendous.
Okay, good. Are you still there, Joan?
I'm still here.
So thanks for patiently hearing it out, and I hope that's enough. And I'll send you a manuscript, and then you can see all the little check marks. And you can read, and I'll send you a copy of the page I just read from on my notes, so you'll see what I'm referring to, and you have your own notes, you'll know what my little notes mean.
Okay.
Okay, great.
Okay? All right, then. Carolyn says goodnight, or goodbye.
We'll see you then.